Hi, you're listening to Conversations with Musicians with Leah Roseman. In episode 12, season 1, I spoke with Roddy Elias, a jazz guitarist, composer, and educator. At the beginning of the episode, you'll hear him play a tune. I'll let you guess which one when you hear it. And we discussed many things around creativity, including some of Roddy's projects, his 2022 album Not This Room, and his puppet opera Sleeping Rough, both of which he collaborated with his life partner, the author Sandra Nichols. He also talked about his start in the business and his perspectives as both a martial artist and musician. In a separate bonus episode, you can hear us play an improvisation. All these episodes are also available in video format, and the link is in the description.
Hello. Welcome.
Good morning.
Roddy Elias, guitarist, improviser, composer, educator. And I'm so happy you agreed to speak with me on the series. And I know you're ready to play something for us.
I am, and good morning. Nice to see you on this sunny morning. Thank you.
just hang in there at the end. Oh, gorgeous. Thank you.
It's amazing. I love that too.
Yeah, and the name of it is?
These are a few of my favorite things, Rodgers mm-hmm. and Hammerstein.
Yeah.
I think, yeah.
And it's like you put it through this beautiful kaleidoscope for us. That's really, really great. Can you say a little bit about that beautiful instrument you're playing on?
I sure can. This is handmade by a woman, which shouldn't sound odd, but let me give you a fact too. We're in Ottawa, mm-hmm. and in the Ottawa region, well, up until 2 weeks ago, three of the world's absolute best guitar makers were women living in Ottawa. One of them just moved to Newfoundland, and that's Peggy White. Mm-hmm. And I can't say enough about, she came to guitar building late in life, and her partner, Linda Manzer, at the time, is still one of the world's leading guitar makers. You know, she's the one who made that fancy guitar for Pat Metheny, the one with all this harp guitar with a million strings. She's made Pat Metheny probably 20, 30 guitars. Mm-hmm. And Linda mentored Peggy. And mm-hmm. so Peggy started I don't know what age, but later in life. She was a musician, though, as well, amongst other things. So she had a great ear. And still is a musician and a singer. And anyways, so she made me this guitar, and we talked about it a long time. We talked about the woods, and she said, would you be interested in having a quite unusual back and sides made of African blackwood? Mm-hmm. Well, I said, I'd never heard of that. Let's, you know, and she explained it might give it a nicer sound, and we went for it. And sure enough, I mean, the bass is sort of, I don't like using this analogy, but it's almost like a roar, it's just so alive. Mm-hmm. Like there's so much, as they say in China, qi in this instrument. It's really alive, and it responds so well. We had to work on getting the action, because a lot of time people who play these kinds of guitars are playing, you know, folk music or something, and you know, and I'm trying to play Bach and stuff on it, so I need an action a little bit more friendly, but without compromising the sound, which was, and she worked with me, and we got it to my picky specifications. Mm-hmm. And she's just brilliant. I can't say enough. I'm gonna get her to make me a 7-string guitar. Mm-hmm. No. Anyway, well, for people interested out there, there's a 3-year waiting list now. So
we'll have a link to her website in the description of this video. Great. as well as all your projects. Yeah. You know, you mentioned you practice Bach. I know you do that a lot. So you really do straddle the jazz and classical worlds, especially as a composer.
As a composer, yeah. I would not perform mm-hmm. Classical music because I'm just not, you know, I mean, I have, but and I can, but it's not my strength, and I just do it one just because it really pleases me, and mm-hmm. it grounds me. So I either try to do it first thing in the morning or last thing at night, so mm-hmm. Or before a gig sometime, like I played 2 days ago, did a recording, and I just to ground myself. I know I was going to improvise with someone like freely for an hour nonstop, mm-hmm. so I just wanted to ground myself, and I just played some Bach, and it's how can somebody write so much beautiful music? It's just like, I mean, we've all wondered that, like mm-hmm. this endless flow of, so yeah, it's particularly Bach. And I like listening to and studying a bit like different composers. Right now I'm back to Ligeti, who was a big influence on me when I was a music mm-hmm. student. And I'm just taking, you know, the piano studies, and I might just take, you know, 2 bars and look at it and try and play some of the voicings, and then see how I might use those principles mm-hmm. slowly, you know. So, and Ravel and studying those. Yeah, so I more study them from a compositional point of mm-hmm. view than to perform them, although I love trying to play mm-hmm. that music.
I think a lot of the most interesting musicians like yourself have a pretty interesting path, the way they developed musically. So can you speak to that, like your early days on the road with Rock Band in California and different stuff you've done?
Yeah, well, even before that, okay, so yeah, I mean, I went through a lot of different styles. When I was young, I didn't start playing guitar until like 12 or 13, and I did not come from a musical house, mm-hmm. right? Nobody played instruments or sang, although my cousins sang. Well, I had my cousins, first cousins, and they all sang and played things. But for a year, we were in transition, moving, and we ended up in these, those apartment buildings that have three, walk up three floors, right? And there's three of those apartment buildings in the sort of enclave, right? And mm-hmm. and in about five or six of those units were guitar players. Right upstairs from us were the Rowan brothers, who played in hall every night, six nights a week. And there was two French Canadian kids, one played the harmonica. So all different kinds of music. And there was a guy below me that played the Hawaiian lap steel guitar, like mm-hmm. this. And he started, that's how I started. And country music with a bar and stuff. And then, and then just learning all kinds of music, country music, pop music, and so on. And then when the Beatles came out in 62, I guess, I went and I bought the record at the Treble Cliff on the Mall. And within 2 weeks, I knew all the songs. Mm-hmm. And then, so we had a band in high school. We played the Beatles songs and Rolling Stones and stuff for a year. And then this musician from Barbados came, Lou Curtin, and he was an incredible R&B singer, like mm-hmm. really great. And he auditioned a bunch of bands and he decided to choose us. So we became the Lou Curtin Soul Review. We played R&B for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And that was really, meanwhile, I'm taking classical guitar lessons and reading mm-hmm. lessons because I could play by ear. And also trying to learn jazz tunes, like the stuff like that on my own, not really understanding what jazz was, but liking the tunes and not the heavy, not Charlie Parker or anything. I didn't mm-hmm. hear Charlie Parker till later. I graduated from high school, barely, and then I auditioned for a band from Montreal. A pop band called the Scepters, and they had a number one hit across Canada. And anyway, I got the gig, and we toured across Canada, and that was like, I don't know if you remember a group, the Four Seasons, you know, and it was a one guy with a really sherry baby, you know, mm-hmm. way up high, and so four part harmony. It was like a vocal group, so I had to sing the tenor part just below him, and so. Like straining my voice every night. Anyway, did that for about a year. That group broke up, and then I got a call. Then I was playing at the Skyline Hotel with all these old jazz musicians in the dining room playing standards, you know. Still only 20, 19 or 20, I think. And I got a call. The maitre d' comes up and says, you have a call from L.A. Okay. So I go and answer the phone, and it's somebody offered me a job playing with a pop tour, you know, like a Holiday Inn type circuit band, right? That was based in L.A. Mm-hmm. And the only reason they'd heard of me was because the guitar player that was leaving knew of me somehow, right? So and then two of them were Canadian and two of them were American in this band. So I thought about it overnight, and then the next day I was on the plane to L.A.
Wow.
And that lasted a year, and we played, I wasn't fond of the music. It was like real middle of the road. I couldn't stand it, but I mean, I was making pretty good money and seeing all over the States, you know, from California up the coast, up to Alaska and all through the Midwest and a bit in Canada. So that was nice. And incidentally, on both of those touring things, I'd spend my days practicing, right? Mm-hmm. The first gig, I shared a room with the drummer. He'd watch soap operas all day with his drum pad and curl his hair. So I'd go in the bathroom and turn on the fan so I couldn't hear him when I practice. And so I missed a lot of travel Anyway, so yeah, the very eclectic thing. And then came back to Ottawa and luckily started finally mixing with musicians that I wanted to play with, mm-hmm. with jazz music, older music, all older. And, you know, was mentored that way by on the gig, mm-hmm. you know, learning, playing. I was lucky to land a gig that lasted 3 years, six nights a week, playing with people that were twice my age and they were great players. And I'd come home every night and I sound horrible. And I'd practice literally till the sun came up. And then I'd sleep till, you know, and then one day, you know, I didn't know what to practice in those days, like jazz. There was no jazz pedagogy. You just learned by, you know, copying records and mm-hmm. listening. But also, I mean, you had to learn the instrument. So, you know, I thought, well, okay, on the guitar, I've got to learn how to play every scale from every finger and every position and this and every arpeggio. And I've developed this really good technique. And it was like too much because, and one day I asked this older musician, Norm Clark, I said, well, I didn't ask. I said, Norm, I said, the more I practice, the worse I sound, you know? Because I was practicing all these things and then plugging them in to improvise. So I sounded like, it sounded like scales and arpeggios, right?
Yeah.
And so he looked at me and said, well, stop practicing. So, yeah, so that's it. And meanwhile, I'm always playing classical guitar. And so, yeah, it was like all new to me, like, and lucky enough in those days to, when I was in high school, to go to Lihi Bu Coffee House here mm-hmm. and hear like a real eclectic mix of music, no classical music there, but it was some incredible, like Joni Mitchell came by as a single folk singer, mm-hmm. Jerry Jeff Walker, Sonny Terry and Brian McGee, these blues singers, and some jazz there, and yeah, Lenny Bro used to come. Lenny Bro, like a Canadian who's like, you know, incredible genius on the guitar. And that was a big influence on me too, because he would sit there and he'd play like an Indian raga and then he'd play a flamenco piece. Or he'd bring all that music into what was loosely termed jazz. Mm-hmm. And that, so I was at a young age exposed to the fact that, yeah, jazz isn't always just a... You know, it can be like, you know. You get all kinds of things in there, you know. And then he started doing these, you know, flamenco techniques. Just a hard tune. And I think I just, you know, and like my mentors would say, the people I looked up to said, listen to all kinds of music. Mm-hmm. Right. And then the famous line by Chet Atkins, Duke Ellington. You know, there are two kinds of music. Good music and bad music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you mentioned a little bit about jazz pedagogy, and you've been very active as a teacher of both composition and guitar. And you teach on, you started teaching online way before the pandemic.
Yeah.
And students all over the world. So what kind of approaches do you take?
The only approach I take is no approach. So I treat everybody totally different as an individual. So I have no, yes, I mean, I have things that I teach. I mean, when we talk about harmony, I do this, or we talk about, you know, I have modules, but I don't teach them in any particular order or any particular manner, right? So I have a certain information, a certain approaches, certain philosophies, certain, you know, ideas, but I really try to find out first what the student is looking for, mm-hmm. and what their strengths are, and what their weaknesses are, but particularly what their strengths are, and go with that. What, like, I like to go with the, you know, some students don't like it, you know, like I say, like, what do you want to work on today? You know, it's different. It's very different than a classical approach, right? It's like, because in jazz, the most important thing is finding your own voice. Mm-hmm. So if I impose things on a student, it's not helping them. So my job is to help them teach themselves, because that's really what jazz is about. So transcribe, maybe transcribe a solo. A lot of jazz musicians talk about transcribing a solo, which means listen to, say, what Charlie Parker or Louis Armstrong did, and learning it by ear. That's fine, but it doesn't get you anywhere. What you need to do is maybe learn it by ear then, but then rather than learn those licks or whatever note for note and plug them into your playing, which some people do sort of, try to analyze and understand what was that musician going for? What's the principle behind what they're doing? And then find your own voice. So it's about, we always talk about language in jazz, finding your language, finding your own language. But it's about finding your own language, not using somebody else's language. But you can use somebody else's language and then twist it to make it your own language. Mm-hmm. So it's like just like reading a lot of books and then getting used to how sentences work and everything, mm-hmm. without copying the sentences verbatim.
Gets distilled.
Yes.
Before, you talked about feeling grounded, and I know that you've had a close relationship with a couple of martial arts over many years. Does that have a bearing on your approach to practicing or music making, do you think?
I think what I've noticed over the years is that martial arts and music are basically just different manifestations of the same pursuit, and that's mm-hmm. the pursuit of grounding, getting inside yourself, getting outside yourself, connecting with the outside world, connecting with the inside world, and different approaches to doing that. I mean, there are some martial arts that actually have music in them, like drumming, mm-hmm. drumming with the and rhythm and flow. I mean, to me, the big connection is, especially with improvisation, is flow, mm-hmm. flowing. So rather than martial arts, you spar, right? And so, one of the first things when you're a younger martial artist is if you're sparring, you think you have to respond to something or react to something. So somebody throws a punch and you have to react to it. But what I've learned slowly over the years is that it's all about flowing. Being in the moment and flowing with, like, really connecting with your opponent, whether it's a friendly opponent or a not friendly opponent, connecting and understanding what they're doing and going with it, flowing with it, and not trying to oppose it, but maybe deflect it or go with it or whatever. And I think music is so much like that. It's like you're flowing. So the other night when I was playing with Jean-Michel, we don't, like, if he plays a chord, I don't go, oh, he played a D minor sus for anyone, so I can play, it's like you asked a question, and I sort of flow with it, right? It's like, I don't have an answer set up. I don't have, okay, Leia asked this question, here's my answer to that. It just evolves, right? So it's flowing. So I think that's the real connection mm-hmm. between martial arts. And then this is spiritual, getting inside, the energy. External energy comes from internal energy. And I find the same with music, right? So if I play a note, even on the guitar, which is not a wind instrument, if I breathe out, if it's coming from here and I breathe out from my lower abdomen, the diaphragm and all that, not in a physical way, but if the energy is coming inside and just going, so I'm hearing it in here and I'm feeling it here and I'm feeling it here. So three levels, the gut, the heart, and the head. And it's exactly the same with martial arts. Well, that's where that idea comes from, I think, for me. So, but I remember going to a cello clinic, or actually my girlfriend at the time went to a cello clinic, and she relayed this story to me of how the cellist said, you know, it comes from here in the sound. And I thought, that's when I started, that could work on guitar too. Mm-hmm. And so I tell all my students, like, it comes from here, and just play the note and then listen to it coming out, just like your breath is coming out. Imagine the sound coming out of the instrument, but it's coming from here. Rather than just going, I mean, I could hear the difference there. Mm-hmm. One is like just superficial. And so I guess in martial arts, it's like, okay, here's a punch. There's, you know, I've done all the body mechanics, but now it's coming from inside, and everything's relaxed and joined and connected. And it's, I'm just projecting with my mind. And it's there. It's like it's projecting. So projecting out with your mind, if I project this note out, if I just think of it going to you or going to this microphone rather than just playing the note, so now I think of it, you know, think of it,
few months I've been able to listen to you perform live with other jazz musicians. Do you want to talk about that, how that's been possible during our lockdown?
Oh, you haven't been, or you have?
I have been. I have heard you.
On the Sync Space. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Adrian Cho, who's a local musician and scientist and brilliant person, came up with this brilliant idea of separating the video and the audio. And so that you can actually play with musicians, ideally in the same city, mm-hmm. but in different locations, and without any latency. So, and it actually sort of, it works, works with people out of town. Like I play regularly with my friend in Toronto, Lauren Lofsky, mm-hmm. who's a great guitarist. So we're going to play this afternoon, mm-hmm. just play some tunes together. And he's reharmonized the tune. He's going to show me how we just hang and, as if he was at my house or I was at his house and we were playing.
Yeah.
So there have been a few gigs that way, and it's been very interesting. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, it's great. It's not like the real thing. I mean.
But it enables a certain magic to take place when we've all been so isolated. And in the future, I think it's only going to get better. So I'll have a link to Sync Space for sure in the description on this video. And for non-musicians listening to this, a lot of people don't realize, because there's been all this stuff on YouTube in the past year, and people said to me, well, those orchestras are playing together. I said, no, people really don't get that everyone pre-records their part and it's all put together. But with Sync Space, it is live so the latency has to do with the fact that if we were trying to play together now, rhythmically, we could not be in sync, even though we're both using Ethernet without special technology. So that's what
Because I play a note and then you hear it a little bit later than I mm-hmm. play it, and then you play one back. And
yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah. So yeah. If you're in the same city and you both have really good Wi-Fi, high speed, and it's a good day, there's like, you don't even hear a latency. There might be a little bit, but it's like as if you were 12 feet apart.
Yeah. I've used it as well with my students to play duets. It's quite magical, actually.
Yeah.
Especially since I hadn't seen them in person for so very long.
Yeah. In live music, there's latency too. Like in your orchestra, for example.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, the percussionists have to deal with, when exactly am I going to play this? Because there's a big space, right, between mm-hmm. the basses and the percussion. I don't know, what's 50, 60 feet?
Oh, yeah.
You know, so they have to take all those things into consideration.
Mm-hmm. And I want to circle to some of your composition projects. I want you to speak about Sleeping Rough, which is an amazing collaboration with your wife and other musicians.
Okay. Well, Sleeping Rough was... it's an opera. I don't like to use that word because I'm not really an opera composer. And I mean, I've studied some operas, but I'm not, I'm a bit of a phony, but I called it opera because it was the closest.
It was an opera. I was there. It was amazing. Yeah.
I mean, but for someone who is not really that fond of opera.
Might turn them off.
Although, no. I felt like a phony writing an opera, right? Okay. And some operas I really like, I love, you know, like, you know, Berg and anyway, I won't get into that, but so it's an opera for puppets, and it's puppets. I've always wanted to do something with puppets, like always, and I never knew what, you know, the different puppet traditions across, all over the world, right? From Indonesia, Japan, and so on, and Africa, and even in the States and in Canada. So I wanted to do something. I didn't know what. Another background to this is when I was, I won't say a young student at Ottawa U studying music, because I didn't go to university to study music till I was 30. And I went to study classical composition. I was already had a career playing jazz for 10 years. So I went back. I was teaching there jazz and decided to take, anyway, that's not a long story. But I lived, while I was a student, I lived right across the street from the Men's Mission, which was a homeless shelter for men. And I watched these people every day, got to know some of them, talked with some of them. And so that was always a, not an interest for me, but a concern for me. Like, and I'd see people starting off there, and they maybe start off with a suit jacket. They like maybe were married, had kids, lost their job, things went downhill, and they'd end up there for what they thought was a few days, and they'd still be there a year later, and I'd see them degenerate. And I mean, and so they came from all different walks of life, so it became very concerned, or, and so that was always in the back of my mind. And one day, Julian Armour from Music and Beyond called me up, and he said, well, we haven't done any Roddy music for a while. What would you like to do? I said, well, and he's, I mean, you know, he's such a great supporter that way. Like, let's do it. Let's find a way to do it. And so we got the funding, and so the music... it's about a homeless man, and all the characters, it's about a homeless man and a young woman who wants to help him out. She's a social worker, and the young woman's mother, and there's a narrator, and almost like a Greek chorus, a one person Greek chorus, who is incredibly done by Kelly Lee Evans. And all four singers, main singers, were just unbelievable. I couldn't believe it. And different, like, two jazz singers and two opera singers. And so all the characters were played by puppets made by Noreen Young from Almont, who is where Peggy had her studio too. What a place. And they're just, Noreen's like, you know, she's like the Order of Canada for making puppets. That's how good she is. And these puppets were so, as you know, so magical. And I felt like they could actually do things that human beings couldn't do, because there's no ego in them. Like, so that it was just pure emotion, and they were so expressive. And I didn't know what the hell I was doing. Really, I mean, okay, now that I got into this, how do you write an opera? Yeah. So I just said, well, and then Sandra Nichols, who I've done a lot of work with, it happens to be my wife, but I mean, even if she wasn't, I'd work with her. Like, she's so great. And we just connected. That's how we met, is like talking about music and poetry. And and I said, I'm always looking for poetry to set music to. And she thought I was giving her a line. Well, maybe I was, no. And so she just, we talked about what the, you know, the story, we, you know, evolved. And she just wrote an incredible, moving libretto. So I thought, well, okay, now what do I do? So, well, okay, opera, they sing melodies. It's all about singing the melodies. So so I just sat down and I took the libretto and I wrote from beginning to end a melody line. Nothing else, no chords, no, just the melody, how do I express these words with melody? Mm-hmm. You know, you're not going to go, I'm happy today. You know, so you want to get something that expresses, you know. And then step two was, okay, now what? Well, I guess I better harmonize this somehow, right? And then step three was orchestrate it. So, and I knew exactly who I handpicked the singers, mm-hmm. and I knew, and they all had different things they could do. Like, you know, Felicity, who was singing the part of Emily, I knew she could like do anything, and you know, mm-hmm. she can hear grass grow and arrange like this. So I wrote anything, you know, I wrote, mm-hmm. And so on, and so that luckily worked for me too, just like writing for the singers, for the people. So it came together. I mean, it was really teamwork. I mean, yeah, I'm proud of my writing, the work I did, but every, you know, they say the chain is as strong as the weakest link. There was no weak links at all. Like the puppet making, the musicians, the conducting, Matthew Larkin, the singers, the stage people, everything was like, everybody was like just amazing. So, yeah, that's it worked then. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when you're writing music, are you using a keyboard? Are you using MIDI? Or is it pen and paper?
Pencil and paper.
Yeah.
I usually have my guitar in my hand. Mm-hmm. Mostly because, I mean, I can sit down and write out of my head, but I find I'm just more secure with the guitar in my hand, mm-hmm. right? So I might just fool around, and I might just, you know, I'm sort of like, when I'm improvising, I might, you know, like, be singing the notes in my head, you know, like, so I connect that way, but so if I'm looking at the text and I'm saying, well, I'm doing that right now, I'm writing some songs, right? So mm-hmm. I might just start, okay, who am I writing for? What's their range? What are the words? What do the words convey? And then, okay, so I'm, here's my range, and this is the mood I want. And then, okay, well, I'll just maybe play, just play a melody, just think, you know, and then just play along with it on the guitar. Just, I don't know, just because I'm used to that, and I play the guitar. Mm-hmm. And again, if I'm writing a song, which I'm doing now, I'm writing some songs for Kelly Lee mm-hmm. about COVID. And I'm doing the same thing. I'm just writing the melody first, putting chords to it. And I mean, it's not the way the Beatles wrote songs, right? Or it's a very, a lot of people, I mean, different, a lot, some people write the music and the words at the same time. Some people write the music, then put the words. And some people write with the chords at the same time. Sometimes I do that, but I really like focusing on just the pure melody. Like, yeah, like last night I was working on, you know, the Prelude, Fugue, and Allegro, Bach, and I just played the melody part, you know, right? Whatever, you know, like it's all the way through, and there's these sequences, and it's a fugue and everything, but the melody, I mean, it's just like a song, or like it's just like pure melody. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's all, yeah, okay, it's a fugal, and there's all these things going on, but that's sort of secondary. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so.
So these songs you're writing, is Sandra involved with the lyrics at all?
Oh, yeah. She wrote you know, a dozen poems or songs. And we both struggled with this because we're in the middle of the pandemic and we're writing about the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And I'm finding, and she found too, like she's like, usually like, she can, She works really fast. I work really fast. We both work fast. We both work together. Really, we flow, you know. But we've been struggling with this because I think because of the pandemic, we're not out mingling with people. I mean, you get energy from people. You know, even going to a restaurant, like you know, sometimes we go to a restaurant and, you know, have a bit of wine, have a nice meal, come home. And then I feel like writing music, like I'm charged up from the energy of people, right? Or, yeah, you can get it from nature, and we go from nature walks and everything, but it's, you know, you really get energy from people, I think, and interacting and life experiences. So, you know, sitting in your room like for a year and a half, and then halfway through that trying to, you know, be inspired to write, it's really tough. So, but we're getting there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this has been so inspiring, just the big range of your thoughts and feelings about music and your life and composition. I really appreciate you agreeing to speak to me today.
Oh, thanks. Sorry, boy, I was really talkative this morning. Must have been the coffee.
So thank you.
Season one of this podcast had 20 episodes, and season two continues with a really interesting mix of musicians talking about their lives and careers with perspectives on overcoming challenges, finding inspiration and connection through a life so enriched with music. Please follow this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts to be informed about each new episode.